Good morning, everyone. This is Lion Goodman. Welcome to the third day in the Ultimate Men's Summit. It's going to be a great day, another great day. We've been having so many outstanding talks with experts, luminaries, authors, and speakers. And today is one more in a long line. I'm really excited to welcome Charista Luminaire to this program. I'll be introducing Charista in a moment, but welcome, Charista. Say hello if you're there.
I'm here.
Oh, good. Okay. I wanted to make sure you were with us.
I am.
Great. So just a few logistical things. If you miss any of the sessions today or any day, the recordings will be available to you as a registrant in the program, usually about 24 hours after the session. So feel free to listen in on any of the previous programs. You'll find the recordings on the calendar page. And you can ask questions any time during any session by posting them on Facebook. We're going to be talking for about 20 or 25 minutes, and then we'll ask for questions from you, the audience. If you're on Maestro Conference, then you'll just press a number when we say to do so and be able to ask a question live. Or if you're on the webcast, you can post your question in the little post question node on the webcast. And if you're a tweeter, I never know what to call you if you tweet. You
can
use the hashtag UMS. And again, Facebook, our Facebook page, The Shift Network, is a place to continue the conversation, to ask questions, make recommendations, and discuss our topics. So, again, welcome to the Ultimate Men's Summit. Let me tell you a bit about Charista. I've known Charista for a couple of years. She's an awesome woman, an amazing counselor and coach. She got started very early in her career studying preconception and prenatal health care. In fact, that's what her PhD is in. She got her bachelor's degree in psychology from Harvard. And she's been working with these issues of early childhood attachment and attachment issues starting all the way in the womb, and how these attachment issues affect lifelong intimacy dynamics, especially in our relationships, in our personal relationships. She had a parenting center in Marin for 15 years, and she currently works with senior executives, CEOs, and men who have achieved everything in life except intimacy, meaning, purpose. So there's actually a lot of people like that, and some of you may, in fact, be in the audience. So welcome, Charista. Really happy to have you on the program.
Thank you. It's a joy to be here, Lion.
So the topic today is confused about love. Let's start with the basics. So what are the building blocks of love? What are the basics of love that we need to understand in order to have more love in our life?
Yeah, I'd love to answer that question. And I want to just offer a little prelude what really inspired me behind this notion of trying to understand what are the building blocks of love. It began when I was a young graduate undergraduate from Harvard, and I realized that adults were spending their adult years healing themselves from childhood trauma and abuse and neglect. And I thought, what is the point of spending your adult years healing yourself from your childhood pain? And there began a lifelong quest of trying to really gather from the best of Western, Eastern traditions, spirituality, psychology, what parents who were preparing for parenthood could do to really optimize the well-being of their child from the beginning of life. Got me into the whole field of prenatal psychology, and that attachment begins in the womb between the mother and the child optimally or doesn't. And that the child's sense of confidence to really feel loved and lovable actually is affected by the neurobiology and the neurochemicals of the mother. If the child's wanted, the child in general comes out more confident in its personality nature. And if the child was unwanted, I mean deeply unwanted, the child often has a lot of insecurity. And this continues throughout the early parenting experience. And so I took this notion and developed a whole parenting model, and then began to work with the parents preparing for parenthood, and realized that many of them really did not know how to create healthy attachment based on their childhood wounding. And there began this deep fascination to try to understand how to teach those who didn't get healthy parenting how to really restore and heal and repair what happened to them so they can have functional relationships. Because there's really three kinds of relationships that qualify whether one has these building blocks of love, which I'm going to go into in a minute.
So your book title is Parenting Begins Before Conception. So you're actually saying that how we get set up, even in the womb, is going to affect us our whole lives.
Yeah, for sure. We see the high divorce rate, we see the dissatisfaction in relationships, and that's because each person defines love differently, riddled with their wounding, their conditioning. And there's so much exciting research now that ties in this early parenting understanding that I just clarified with how the nervous system that was created before we were two actually affects our ability to know how to love in our adult dynamics as well. And this has lots of 20 years of attachment research and 2,000 studies that really define this.
So talk about that. Talk about what we know about what you're calling attachment. Maybe you could even start by defining what are attachment issues or what do these theories talk about?
Yeah. So you know, melding all these considerations together, the building blocks of love and how attachment connects to it, we know that the neuroscience has shown us that most relationships are either secure attachment relationships, what I call predictable love, or insecure attachment relationships. And secure attachment relationships have very distinct qualities that one can know. And they begin when we're a child, when the caregiver is very consistent in responding to our distress. They're constantly reassuring us, with holding us, kind of a kinesthetic sense, with eye contact, giving us reassuring sense that we're being seen and we're okay. And they use their voice. It actually affects what we hear, how they talk to us. It's very soothing and safe. And this kind of attachment gives the child and later in life the adult the sense that my primary love sources, people, I trust will be there. They want to make it safe.
And I would guess that a mother, for example, in order to give that to her child, must be pretty secure in herself in order to give that security to her child.
Yes, optimally. Or she wants to use the early bonding relationship to actually heal her insecure attachment, which is the other distinction, through her relationship with her child. And I can say I was one of those mothers who had insecure attachment, which I'll define. There's really three distinctions, and used my mothering experience to actually create secure attachment for my daughter based on my own healing myself through preparing for parenthood.
But so go into those three types of insecure attachment.
Yeah. So there's preoccupied attachment. It's often called preoccupied attachment. I call it unpredictable love. In other words, the love is there and it's not there. It's inconsistent, the caregiver, in responding to the distress of the child. It's got a mixed quality. So the child is left with this fear that the mother, usually, and or the father, or both, will leave at any given moment. They'll either be there and then they won't be there. And they get obsessed with the caregiver. And they have high levels of distress that they're uncertain of the response. There's a lot of anxiety and anger. They're vigilant. The sense that I can't trust you'll be there when I need you. And that's preoccupied attachment. The second insecure attachment style is called avoidant attachment. And that one is when there's little response from the caregiver. The caregiver seldom responds with a sense that I will be here to hold you, to look at you, to make you feel safe when you're feeling distressed. And this leaves the child and later the adult with a poor ability to self-regulate. And they disengage, they withdraw, and they stop showing signs of distress. Whereas the other one, they show a lot of distress because I get excited you're here, but I'm always anxious you're going to leave. That's the preoccupied attachment. The avoidance, I just suddenly realize and continue to realize that you're not going to be there, and I can't trust you, so I don't even look to you anymore.
So I'm out of here. It's like the separation that can occur. A lot of men go into the cave, as it's called, and so that is that an avoidance strategy?
Yes. I mean, yes and no, because everyone needs to be able to, what we call, self-regulate. In the sense of secure attachment, the neuroscience research calls it co-regulation. I happen to call it love. It's when you can depend on someone to actually care for your vulnerability, for your needs, particularly when you're feeling weak. You know, vulnerability is defined in many ways. The feeling of feeling too needy, out of control, you know, I'm going to be judged, I need to be perfect, I'm going to be rejected if I reveal my deepest feelings, any feelings. And so we know the neuroscience shows that the brain is divided into three parts, Lion. And this is very important to understand why insecure attachment, the preoccupied and the avoidance attachment, and then the last one, the traumatized attachment, when you have a scary caregiver who really frightens you and traumatizes you and disrupts you, creates a real deep kind of dysregulation in the nervous system itself. And we wonder, you know, back to the building blocks of love, we know that when we feel safe, our nervous system feels calm. And when we feel distressed that we're not getting the love, the attention, the trust, we feel a sense of danger. And this is playing out in the three parts of the brain.
So most of the people I know are working hard on their intimate relationships. They're
yeah.
trying to have what you're calling secure love with their partners.
Yes.
But again, most of the people I know don't have that. It's a constant struggle. So
yeah.
are you saying that these early childhood experiences play out in our adult relationships?
Absolutely. The attachment research shows with these over 2,000 studies that these four major types of programming we received, the secure attachment and the three insecure attachments, actually qualify our adult intimacy patterns. So it's very important to know what your matrix is, what your primary experience is. If you have secure attachment, your ability to have healthy relationship is definitely optimized. So we know that couples who have healthy relationships, at least one of them, in general, had secure attachment or have healed themselves from insecure attachment. So if you have two people with insecure attachment, that's where we get the vicious cycles, because we go into a very primitive reaction. It's really our children, our hurt, wounded child having the relationship a lot of the time. You know, Lion, that here's a really simple distinction. You have a couple who stays up all night. One triggers the other, and they're processing. They start at 9 at night, and they're at 4 in the morning. They're still at it, and they have not gotten any relief from the distress. They don't feel safe with each other. They feel stuck and insecure and frustrated. These are all signs. They want to go into a fight or flight just to preserve themselves, and their feelings become stories. You know, I don't trust you. I'm never enough. I feel like a failure. I'm not lovable, and they recycle over and over. That's two insecure relationship styles. Then,
this is sounding a lot like some of my relationships.
Yeah, sounds familiar, huh? For all of us, I'm sure. Now, what creates mature love, healthy love, is when one comes with their vulnerability. They're feeling insecure. They can be feeling confused or anxious, nervous, resentful even, infuriated. And they come to the other partner, and they have this deep, vulnerable feeling of distress, and their body's showing all kinds of signs mirroring it. They're pretty estranged. And the other partner is invested, the secure attachment partner is invested in making sure, and together, if they are building secure attachment, in making sure that when one feels distressed, they're going to create the loving conditions to really help that person feel calm. In other words, they're invested in calming and soothing and loving each other. And there's specific ways to do that. And so that version would be, they come in at 9 o'clock, I am so pissed off at you, you hurt me, you embarrassed me, or whatever it is. And the other partner goes, oh, honey, what do you need? Do you need a hug? You realize that that could save about 8 hours of processing, and you could be asleep in 5 or 10 minutes. You know, maybe 20, or you'll be having some great hot sex, maybe for hours, from one simple ability to care for that partner's vulnerability and learn what it takes to really help them calm down their nervous system.
Rather than go into reaction to the other person, and then now I've got my own reaction to your reaction.
Yeah. So there's simple ways to do that. And this is what the exciting research shows, is that when children... before they're even verbal, are in signs of distress from the first moments of birth up till particularly 2 years when the brain is being developed, the higher brain, the midbrain, and the brainstem. The midbrain is where the smoke alarm is, and the child knows if it's safe or in danger. And what the secure attachment parent knows is that there's three ways when a child feels in danger to co-regulate them, to actually be in relationship, to be responsible, to calm them down. And this is what most adults don't realize they can do with their beloved. Three languages are the visual, the eye gazing. The child is distressed, it's crawling, it looks back to the mother, it's frightened. And the mother and or the father look to the child with loving eyes and say, "You're safe. I see you." You know how everyone wants to feel, "I see you." And there's a sense of reassurance in the eyes. The tone of voice, instead of the parent being afraid, yelling at the child, "You're in danger," or "You're not safe," the tone of voice is, "You're safe," or, "Hey, honey, you're not safe. I'm going to come, and I'm going to actually console you and calm you down, pick you up." And the third language is in the touch. It's actually soothing through touch. These are the three primary nonverbal languages. And most couples don't realize that's right there, any given moment, to see their partner in a loving way, to talk to them, you know, and to feel that they're being heard and that they're able to be held, to calm them down. So we need to go back to those primary love languages. And it's amazing in my practice when I see couples come in escalated and yelling and estranged, I simply have them first look at each other, ask if the other wants to be touched in a particular way, a holding of the hand, a touching of the knee, or they just want to, you know, be talked to in a loving, respectful way, and the nervous system calms down, and then you're really in real time, and the intimacy just pours out, the vulnerability.
So the security, what you're calling security or secure attachment, is actually a nervous system condition coming from safety. And, you know, I know that I was raised by a mother who had read Dr. Spock, who said, you know, don't go and rush to your child when he's crying. Let him cry, because he has to learn that he doesn't always get what he wants and needs.
Look at us.
Yeah,
right. We're a mess.
That's why we're so screwed up. Curse you, Dr. Spock, yes.
Well, look at the divorce rate and the dissatisfaction relationships. I mean, it's amazing how, that's why I call it the building blocks of love. The ABCs are so simple. And we all need to get back to basics if we're in reactivity. We need to go back to our childhood and reflect on what our primary attachment style is. And there's solutions for each one. As I said, we need to care what our partner's attachment style is and realize if they got avoidant attachment, they're going to be more what we call avoiders in adult relationship. They're actually going to shut down more. They're going to go into states of feeling, you know, blank and empty and depressed, and they're going to withdraw when they're upset. They're going to get paralyzed and usually stay in their head. And you know what they're needing from us? They're needing to feel accepted and valued. They're needing to feel they're enough. And so they're avoidant types, and they kind of use their shield to keep the intimacy from going. And a lot of it is we just need to really have compassion and help them find out what they need to feel safe.
What about when you reach out to your partner and they withdraw further? You know, you're trying to reach out with touch or there's something in their, if they're an avoidant type or they're withdrawing, they withdraw even further.
Well, they don't withdraw if they feel safe and they feel like they can be vulnerable and that you're really going to value their primary feelings, you know, that they're good enough, because they feel they're not enough. They can't get it right usually. So if they feel, if you know, part of the healing is learning what are the words that I can say, what are the behaviors I can do to really inspire you to feel safe and cared for by me, that I really do care for what you feel. Please don't withdraw. I'm here. Now, avoidant types usually hook up with preoccupied types, and they're often called the pursuers in the relationship line. Their behaviors are usually attacking and aggressive. They criticize, they blow up, they pursue. And they're desperate for connection because their parent was there and then they disappeared. They were there, then they disappeared. That's the preoccupied ambivalent attachment trauma. And they usually use complaining and criticism to attack. And their primary story is, I don't matter. you know, I'm alone. I don't matter. And they usually feel hurt and they feel abandoned. And so each style needs to learn how to really care for the other, because the pursuer will be more the attacker. He has more the sword. The avoider has more the shield. And what they both want is security. They want to feel lovable and needed, and they need to learn each other's love language to do that. And there's a way to teach that very simply.
So I know that you you counsel couples and individuals. Are there particular books or courses that you recommend for people who want to learn more about this?
Yeah. Well, I myself am doing a wonderful course called The Building Blocks of Extraordinary Love with my dear colleague, John Gray, spelled with an E, who has inspired me to really understand the neuroscience behind love. And we're doing some weekend trainings end of August and a 9-month training for couples to really learn how to free themselves from the vicious cycles of all this pain and confusion and mistrust and insecurity and rewire the brains and hearts that can be rewired, getting practical tools. There's all kinds of exciting research out there. One can Google on attachment and adult intimacy. There's really a great body of work out there, the neuroscience, many different angles. And,
you also work with executives who are wanting to find purpose and meaning in their lives, right? The people that have everything but love, purpose, and meaning.
So, yes. I'm in the process of launching Life's Work Synthesized into a one-year program with several wonderful luminaries, male luminaries, a program called Luminary Leadership Institute, where we have a one-year initiatory program for men in particular and couples to create a very custom-designed program with exciting assessments to help really understand one's love style, one's relationship to power, and how to use their mind to really express their highest calling and purpose. And we create these initiatory programs called the True Self Way, creating a butterfly effect from a caterpillar to a butterfly in any area of life where they want to create greater potentialization.
Yep. Let me take a moment now and just say, if you would like to be on Karista's mailing list and find out more about her programs, press 1 on your phone dial, or if you're on the webcast, send a question, post a question with your email address, and we'll hand those over to Karista so she can be in touch.
Yeah.
And you have a website as well?
Yes, I do. It's www.trueself, one word, .net, trueself.net, Karista, C-A-R-I-S-T-A, at trueself.net, or Karista at AOL.com. I'm welcome to dialogue with people, and they're welcome to contact me.
Great.
Yeah.
So let's come back to this, to the building of secure attachment and relationship, because that's really a problem for a lot of people. It's like, how do I become more intimate? How do I get closer to my partner? There's a kind of downward spiral that I've seen in relationships, including in my own, where you get a little bit distant, and then something happens, you get more distant. It's as if there's capital, you know, love capital that gets taken away by each argument, and then pretty soon you're borrowing against future love. So how do you keep that bank account full so that the things that happen aren't killing the relationship?
Yeah. Well, you're either in secure attachment or insecure attachment. You're either in a co-triggering experience or you're in a co-regulating. And so you want to learn how to co-regulate, you know, how to really handle the partner's distress. So
I've used that term before, the co-regulation. Would you describe it? And because you've used it both in terms of childhood and also adulthood.
Yeah. The adult version of co-regulation is the same love languages that we used to co-regulate with our primary caregiver in childhood. We actually need to continue that intimacy. Everyone needs co-regulation. And those are really knowing how to touch and hold and find out from the partner what their languages of being touched and held. One might like massage. One might like to lie quietly. One might like eye contact, which is the second language of co-regulation. One might not. And the third is the soothing voice to really reassure the other. They're very simple building blocks. I'm going to keep it very simple. It's not in the head. It's a willingness to just calm the other's nervous system so they can feel open to share whatever they want to feel from their deepest, darkest secrets and pain. oh, you are an ally, that whatever I'm feeling, you're invested. Co-regulation is you're invested. We share a commitment to value each other's deepest feelings. And I can trust if I get triggered, you want to soothe me, you want to help me get calm again, and you want to respond. I can trust you're going to do your best to respond positively. And if not, we are going to, you know, take some space to self-regulate and, you know, get back to that state where we can be vulnerable with each other, as well as really, you know, sacred relationship, which is really maturing all these childhood reactions and feelings about love so that the relationship is really designed to bring out the true nature in each other, the highest, most noble aspects, which is really when relationship is juicy. So,
right. So I know that a lot of men fear being vulnerable because if they open up and they admit what's really going on, their woman or their partner might either criticize them or become or use it against them to emasculate them. You're not a man. You're acting like a little boy. I mean, these are some of the most hurtful things that a woman can say to a man. So there has to be a kind of knowledge that the other person's not going to use that vulnerability against you, right?
Yeah, well, that's part of the maturing of the emotional body, is that I'm committed to not castrate you emotionally with you know, admonitions and judgments that's going to put you into a more escalated state of distress. That's what mature love is committed to do, is that I want to be predictable, that I've got your back and I have your heart in my hands, and I want you to feel like you can reveal those deep feelings and your pain, and vice versa. Please be there for me. It's an equal commitment to be there, to see closeness, and to want to respond, to learn what responding positively is for the other partner. So it's learning the other's love language and making that investment to see where the unconscious strategies of the primal brain are putting us into fight or flight, criticism, withdrawal, and then say, hey, wait, I want to grow up. I want to be a mature adult here, learning what healthy love is. That means when you put out a vulnerable distress signal, I want to co-regulate you. I want to be predictable.
This is very helpful to me, and I'm sure to much of our audience. So if you have a question for Chris, do we have time for a couple of questions? So press 1 on your phone dial, or if you're on the webcast, you can post a question there. So we'd be happy to take a couple questions from the audience. And Ben is our technology master and our call manager. Thank you, Ben, for being there for us. Do we have any questions from the audience?
Absolutely. We have Harvey here with a question. Harvey, you're live. Go ahead.
Hi, Harvey.
Hi, Calista. I loved what you had to say so far.
Thank you.
This morning, I was revealing myself because I saw something on television that reminded me of my own experience. And when I finished speaking to my wife, she said something that was a joke. And I was very hurt, and I expressed to her my hurt, and she said, well, you don't seem to have a sense of humor. And I said, I don't have a sense of humor when I'm revealing myself, and you make it a joke. And I'm just wondering if there's anything I can do to discharge that feeling of hurt that probably she had, including, and also me.
Right. Yeah. Beautiful question. You're really illustrating what happens with couples, you know, where, and your instinct to discharge is indicative of what happens to the nervous system, right? You get kind of the heart pounds, you have some kind of response, and you know you don't feel perhaps safe. She has to want to care that she had that effect on you. That's the first step. You two need to be committed to really going deeper in the intimacy dynamics, that when one gets triggered, even if they didn't mean it, they stop and care for those feelings. So it could be as simple as if she was interested in co-regulating, in other words, you could use her to then share that vulnerability and know that you're going to be held lovingly. You'd reveal the feeling, and she would basically apologize. She would want to own and repair what she's done in ways that would soothe you. So what would you want her to have said if she had had that awareness?
So let's go on to the next question. So what you're saying is that joking can be used by either men or women as kind of a discharge of tension, but it can be very hurtful as well.
Yeah. So,
so, so there's got to be a commitment to repairing and restoring the that calm safety.
Yeah, let's care about that. Yeah.
Yeah, let's take the next question. Go ahead, Ben.
Okay. We have EJ here. Go ahead, EJ.
Hello, EJ.
EJ, you've got the mic. Go ahead with your question.
Okay. Why don't we go with Bob? Go ahead, Bob.
Hi,
okay.
Bob.
Hi. You described a relationship earlier where it was exactly the situation my wife and I are experiencing right now, where one partner is criticizing and feeling not safe, not alone, disconnect, mm-hmm. and fault-finding, and more of the sword, and the other one more of the shield. And I am the shield, and we're in a 24-year relationship, marriage, and 13 years before that, we're extremely invested, but we have very little intimacy. It's like she doesn't feel safe. She can't trust. I feel like she's disconnects, and we don't have that opportunity. And I want to understand that more, and also I missed your contact information.
My contact information is trueself.net, Carista, C-A-R-I-S-T-A, at trueself.net or at AOL.com. Oh, yeah, your situation is so common, just to know it's a very big club, and primarily because you two are most likely playing out, you know, just with the negative love patterns of your childhood, and you don't know how to get out of the vicious cycle. So in order to really heal that optimally, you both want to get yourself in a couples counseling context with an attachment specialist who understands how to teach you how to really co-regulate, learn how to co-regulate. You both have to want to do that, or one of you has to learn how to self-regulate and keep themselves balanced and nourished, independent from the other. It takes a willingness to find out if you really, you know, want to share this vision of learning how to work through the relationship problems in a way where you care that you trigger each other, you know, and that you want to get out of the blame, shame dynamic and create a safe, secure, solid relationship. So it's a real art and science. I mean, the science is the neuroscience behind, which explains why we react, and then to learn how to really create calmness and predictability and trust that we can actually heal our childhood patterns and learn a new way to love each other. It's a willingness to do that, a commitment to do that, and that's all healable. I have seen the most dysfunctional, insane, toxic, violent relationships actually transform with these simple, simple efforts to learn how to care for each other's primary love language of how you want to be seen.
Yeah. Great. Thank you. Thank you, Bob. And best of luck with that relationship. And all of us, you know, we all have relationships in which we can go down that dark spiral, and it's great to hear that it's possible to heal. We have time for one more question, Ben. You want to get one more?
Great. Yeah, I'm going to take a question off of Facebook for us. This comes from Eric. And he's asking, how should a man handle high-conflict personalities in intimate relationships? Specifically, how would a man deal with a woman who has been or would be diagnosed under the DSM as having a cluster B personality or been diagnosed with bipolar disorder?
Oh, I've got 1 minute for this one. Oh, gosh. Oh, my goodness.
Probably
well,
see a specialist, right? Because that is a highly complex situation.
And
these kinds of personality disorders are, you know, are very tricky.
Yeah, they're very tricky. I mean, bipolar can be, there's wonderful medication out there to stabilize the biochemical imbalance, which is not personal. That's the first thing, is to realize it's a biochemical imbalance and to have compassion so that the bipolar can really feel cared for. Bipolars have challenges with being able to be vulnerable and feel it's safe to really share their underbelly. And they have a difficult time often with boundaries. They need a lot of reassurance that you're, you know, a source of love. And you also need a lot of reassurance as well that they may or may not be capable of, depending on the extreme condition of the personality disorder. but there are, you know, if people, there's kind of light version bipolar 1 and 2, it just depends how extreme. The key is to get with someone that can teach you how to feel safe to be vulnerable and find out if you both want to learn how to do that. And that takes a real desire and determination to want to heal the historic dynamics and find a new way to really care and build trust.
Thank you. Thanks, Carista. So we are unfortunately out of time. Half an hour is a very short amount of time talk about love, but I think we did a great job at talking about the basics. So I want to thank you very much for being on the program and for sharing your wisdom.
Thank you.
Again, trueself.net is Carista's website. And Carista, C-A-R-I-S-T-A, at trueself.net is a way of getting in touch with her. Feel free to ask other questions on our Facebook page, and Carista will answer them.
Sure.
So that's the Shift Network on Facebook. And we have some amazing programs coming up. Every day is just so chock full. At 10 o'clock, I'll be talking with Keith Marin, a brilliant organizational development and leadership coach, who has been traveling the world talking to remarkable leaders about what it takes to be a remarkable leader. So if you're interested in leadership or business, join me at 10. And at 11 o'clock, Stephen Dynan, my co-host, will be talking with Gay Hendricks and Arjuna Ardog, who put out an apology to women called Dear Woman on YouTube. And they had 5,000 comments, including some death threats. So they're going to be talking about the controversy they stirred up with that. At 12:30, I'll be talking to Gordon Clay, one of the early founders of the men's movement, and his website, mensstuff.org, talking about unintentional suicide, which claims 500,000 men annually, which is kind of an undiagnosed disorder. And then we have Sam Keen, the brilliant grandfather of the men's movement, who wrote Fire in the Belly, among other books, at 1:30. And at 2:45, I'm very happy to be interviewing two brilliant men who are on the front lines of men's pain. Ed Tick, who works with war veterans who have PTSD, and Luis Rodriguez, who works with inner city youth who are in gangs. So it's an amazing day of programming. Please join us for those. You can always listen to the recordings. And at this time, if you'd like to talk about the topics that we've been discussing, you can do so by just staying on the line. And if you'd like to be in small groups with men only, you can press 1. And if you'd like to be in groups that are mixed with men and women, press 2. So if you're a woman, press 2. And we will put you into small groups so you can introduce yourself to each other when the bell rings, and then bring up your topics and sort of self-regulate your small groups. So right now, press 1 if you're a man and would like to be in a men-only conversation. Press 2 if you're a woman or would like to be in a mixed conversation. And after you hear the bell, you can just start talking and manage your own conversations.
And you can put me in one of those groups, Lion, if you want. I'll just be available.
Would you like to be in one of those groups?
Sure.
All right, great. So Carista will be in one of those groups. And thank you so much for joining us today. Carista, thank you. And for all the audience, thank you very much. We'll see you soon, hopefully. And keep on regulating.
Thank you.
Take
keep
care,
on
everybody.
Loving.
Keep on loving. Yeah, even better. That's great. Thanks so much, everyone. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.